I came along, I didn't have the access or the opportunity to be engaged that much in technology. And that's all we use. So what you do, you apply, and you what you have in your timeline, you became used to that. That's your life. That's part of your life.
Hello, and welcome to A Pixie from Kilmarnock, a program about the people, places, and the history of the Northern Neck of Virginia. I'm your host, Pixie E. Curry. The black communities of the Northern Neck shared a compass. The points of direction were the family, the quest for education, the church, and pride in one's vocation. These four directional guides led the people onto one common path, success towards the future of their people. The unique aspect of those guides was it could be the embodiment in a person, a teacher. Mr. Ernest Lacey Ginnings was my math teacher during my high school years, a subject alongside science that I tanked in. He is still the same as I remembered, lo those many years ago. Humorous, caring, honest, and still a man of faith. It is my great privilege to introduce you to Mr. Ginnings.
My name, Ernest Lacey Ginnings, born in Baltimore, Maryland, September the 26th, 1936. Moved to Virginia with my mother and siblings, 1943. I went to Anna T. Jeans Elementary School in Northumberland County, attended Judith Rosenwald High School in Northumberland County, received a B.S. degree from Virginia State College/University, June 1959, Master Degree in Education, Virginia Commonwealth University, Richmond, Virginia, 1972. Awards, many, but chief among them would be several from Mount Olive Baptist Church, Boy Scouts of America, Northern Neck Baptist Convention, Virginia State Mathematics Association, among the few.
When did you graduate from Rosenwald?
1955.
So you are what is considered a come here.
Yeah, I started at first grade at Energy Gene, but I really been born in Baltimore, Maryland.
So when you started school, or when you were in school, schools were segregated, correct?
Entirely.
Can you recall the first time that you ever encountered racism?
To really become aware of racism, I was in the latter years of elementary school. But even at then, encountering and making it a significant part of living, I did not do that, because as a race that we were segregated, we got along fine, we loved one another, and anything that was different wasn't on our mind at that time, because we had some of the best teachers and caring teachers. But after I got in high school, it became more pronounced because you're older, and you see yourself on buses going to schools in Northumberland County. But because of your race, and perhaps because of your natural being, our buses go through what we call, in quotation, the colored schools. We had buses carrying white students passing over the same highway, going to what they call then the white schools. That became more pronounced, and I beginning to observe more that we were separated. It became apparent that the chief reason of being separated that we could see was the color of our skin, although I'm sure that because of embedded emotions on the other race, they had other reasons for us to be separated. Not only because of the race, but perhaps because of our ability to do what normal human beings do, look after themselves. themselves to do the best they can with what they had, they were denied the opportunity to share what the other race shared.
You were talking about some of the excellent teachers. Can you remember your teachers?
Yes. They all had a profound effect because it was, to us back then in the elementary school and even high school, it was almost an extension of our families at home. There was a close connection and a caring of the students. The teachers treated us, I suppose, as their family and as their children. And therefore, because our parents wanted the best for us and they knew that, they knew our parents very well and they communicated very well, there was a close bond between the school and your family at home. And because one knew the expectation of the other, then you went by the same rules at school that you did at home, because you knew the result of not doing that when you got home was the opposite on what you think was going to happen, which always happened. That was punishment.
I know what you're saying. If you didn't do right in class, you're going to get discipline in class, and then you're going to get more when you got home. That's what you're saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we knew that, so there wasn't any questioning or telling somebody at home what you didn't do, because we knew that the teacher would not only talk to the parents at church and place, but they'll come to your house and confront you before your mother. And you would sit there and listen. And that was it. Wasn't any denying or talking back and saying what you didn't do. You listened to what the teacher said. Your parents listened. You went out. They talked to them themselves. And that was it.
What were some of the names of your teachers?
All right, Mrs. Laura Taylor. I'm going to give also some connection of the people, of the teachers that I'm calling names. Some of them, not all of them. Mrs. Laura Taylor was the mother of, if you recall, Mrs. Ernestine Burritt. Of course, she had other siblings. Mrs. E.B. Carter, Elizabeth Carter. I don't remember her family, her mother and father, but she was also one of my teachers. And the two teachers that I've named so far, they also lived in the community, and they belonged to the same church that I belonged to. There was a Mr. Banks, the principal. Mr. Banks came out of Maryland. There was a Mrs. Sebri. I don't know if you remember Ms. Anya Bates or not, but Mrs. Sebri was the mother of Ms. Anya Bates. She came to Northumberland from the Gloucester County, and she taught me. Okay, there was Miss Grace Carla Norris. I don't know if you remember Connie Norris out of Remo, but her mother also lived in the community. Plus, she was also a member of Mount Olive. So most of my elementary school teachers were from the area, and they also went to the same church. So they watched you not only in school and at church, they watch you in the community. And they were highly respected for that, because we just knew the outcome of anything that wasn't accepted at home was not also accepted by them.
What about your high school teachers?
The high school teachers, well, they were from different schools, but I can name them. There was a Mrs. Gloria Ruffin, taught French. Mrs. Gloria Ruffin was from the area over, we'll say, in the Reedville area. And they're nothing but her parents. There was a Mrs. Order I. Hoffman who taught history and government. She was also the music director and the chorus directress. She came from Richmond, but her husband was once the pastor of Macedonia Baptist Church. And they lived for years in that big tall house you see near the church. That was the church's past parsonage. There was a Mr. C.H. Lenzen. Lindsay, agriculture, came out of King and Queen County. He taught in Northumberland, and he also lived in Northumberland. You might have remembered his daughter. He only had one child, and her name was Regina. I think she lives in Maryland now. There was Mrs. Payne, Roberta Payne, was in the school, but she taught business at that time. I didn't take the business, y'all, after she had passed. She passed earlier. Her mother was named Miss Daisy Braxton, and Miss Daisy Braxton was also one of the cooks in the school. Miss Lois Winstead, Miss Lois Castle Winstead. Well, she had quite a few siblings. Joan on down the line. But she was a native of Lancaster, and she, that's where she lived the entire time. I'm not talking about now Booth Ball, I'm talking about her sister, Mrs. Lois Winstead, taught home economics in the high school. I get the principal, Mrs. Huskerson, Mrs. Lillian Huskerson, mathematics. She was a coming here, but she stayed in the area until she got older and moved back, moved out there. She passed. They were the chief teachers in the high school at the time that I went through. Very caring, equal as in the elementary school, but as you get older, they gave you more room, and they expected you to act according to your age. So they weren't as close as the elementary because they don't see you elementary, as far as I'm concerned. They see you as one of their children around the same ages. The high school teacher gave you more room to be a young adult, but you still had to walk, be on your P's and Q's. Because they didn't mind being with the families, and they didn't mind contacting home. So it was almost like a family unit from elementary school through high school.
Who were or was your favorite teacher or teachers?
You know, and you always have one that stands out, but you know, I'm going to say that I look towards all of my teachers as being my favorite teachers because of my home situation. I was expected to act toward them as if they were my mother and father. So I call them very favorite. When you have confidence in a person and you feel that you can go to a person, the person will stop and listen to you and always have time to give you advice, they became favorite to me. Now, if I inch out one teacher, very little inch now, Mrs. Laura E. Taylor, the mother of Mrs. Ernestine Lariat and other siblings. Well, in fact, Mrs. Laura Taylor's son taught me physics at Virginia State College. So then I was part of the family because they are part of my family on the Taylor side. But as I said, you get in high school, then they expect you to be more to the extent you can form valuable opinions and act accordingly.
What were some of your favorite subjects when you was in school?
Top of the list, math, history, and government. Science came in more so after high school because we had very little hand-on in high school. We just didn't have the means to buy what we needed in a science lab. And so, but I still ever studied in the line. And it came to be second when I got to Virginia State University. Science came second because we had so many hand-on activities that you could really see what's going on and analyze accordingly.
I get the impression from other older people that even the types of subjects that you were taught in school, that there was racism in that, whereas you didn't have the science labs, the resources that could help you to expand your interest in sciences, you know, that there weren't laboratories or resources. Do you feel that that was the case?
I know it was the case. I don't have to feel. I was in the midst of it. No, we didn't have the resources. Most of the resources that we got to buy anything extra for class would be for the parents' board meeting, or the parents got together with the teachers and they had other activities like selling candy and selling cookies and having May Days, things of that sort to raise the little fund that they raised. Parents didn't have that much because parents, to the most extent, had jobs that paid them, I'm going to have to say in parentheses again, colored wages. I don't like to say that, but I have to say it because I learned after I got older that there was a great discrepancy in paying for the same work to boys of different races.
I also hearing you saying about the importance of the church in the community as far as the relationship with the schools and with the people that were teaching or supporting or what have you in the community. Tell me a little bit about the involvement of church and school when you were growing up.
Well, see, those teachers that I had they from the area, they were not only active in the school as teachers. Most of the time, they were very active and in leadership positions in the church. So they had you at the church, and they had you at school. Well, you saw both sides of them, academically and biblically. They believe in the Lord, and of course, if you believe in the Bible, that's a supreme source anyway of any kind of guidance. If you have people interested and passing it along to you, and back there then, there wasn't any limitation as what you could be taught because it came from a black resource to begin with. Religion was held in high esteem. We follow the values set by the Bible because those that were ahead of us follow those same morals and they pass it on down to us. We learned, even though we weren't that involved in praying, we learned by hearing adults praying and seeing results after they pray how their personality seemed to change for the outlet of things, looking to become better if they weren't what they were expected to be at a certain time. So they influenced us by their belief in the Word. And at that time, children went to church. It wasn't in a choice. The parents set that stage at an early age that you would be in church. And so as you got older, that was my expectation on Sundays or when they had other activities at church. That's where I would be. It wasn't in a choice. And there wasn't any contention about it. We knew where we were going because we were taught that, and so we went. And I must say that my religious training helped me a lot. I believe in the Word. I believe in God. I believe in prayer. And I don't have to listen to a person think what they're saying because many of those things they talk about, I have experienced. And I experienced the fact that God will answer prayer in His own time. Because of the changes that came in my life because I believed and I prayed.
What was your first job?
My first job was at the Lostburg Elementary School in Lostburg, Virginia, teaching the grade. Do you want me to tell you why I chose Lostburg and didn't go elsewhere?
Go for it.
My mother was an invalid as long as I have known her. And this disability came upon her, so I am told, at the age of 6. My mother was raised by her grandmother right here in Northumberland County. And her mother stayed in Baltimore most of the time. Now, I'm saying something from hearsay, but the hearsay came from my mother. And my belief in my mother being a total Christian and tell nothing but the truth, I believe the things that I heard from her. I've seen the evidence, some of them, because she had disability. She never wasn't able to work, but she was the mother of 4 children, and she could do for her children as though they were in disabilities to keep her from doing so. She overcame her disabilities. Because her goal was to provide the best for her children at all times. When I finished, or even during high school, I was always around the home because my mother needed her children to also provide for her in things that she couldn't do that required a lot of walking. But using her mind and hands, she was tops at that. So after I finished high school, and after I had seen an environment that I grew up into, when I say environment I grew up into, I mean what we had to survive, not because only of who we were as a race, but the lack of being able to work and get what other families had. But we appreciated what we got from my mother, what she could provide. So the Lord put on my mind that I was needed at home. So here's a dilemma. What do I do at home to help provide for my mother at the same time being able to earn what I call being a reasonable salary to help to take care of bills or what have you to survive at home? Teaching was the only thing we had in that area, especially for a black boy coming out of college. Therefore, when the teaching job came long. I had other jobs already to go into. But I chose between staying home and helping my mother to be the best she could be and taking care of her, of us, sorry. I stayed here. So I was able to teach and be at home in the daytime, in the late time, and a lot of time during the day from the school, in the afternoon of school. And here I am. I have never regret the decision I made to stay home to help take care of my mother, which I did even in college. In college, I worked and I sent money at home to help her here. And I feel that I've been extremely blessed by the Lord for the decision that I made to come back home and the love and care that my mother gave that made me have the attitude that that's where I should be to help her and make things easier for as long as she lives. We were raised in a two-room house. And by me coming back home, the Lord blessed me to build a house for us and for my mother, because she had what I called back then some modern conveniences. And she totally enjoyed it, exhibited her joy, and from the fruit of my labor and her labor. So I'm highly pleased, have no regret, that I moved back home to help her take care of my mother. My mother died in 81 at the age of 75. But she was a warrior, inside the house and outside the house. But I'm not going to tell you about her ability to get around, even though it was a burden on her, because bring back memories want to make me shed tears. But I'm happy because she could sit in a chair in a house and do as much as a person who had two good legs. And she did that. She even worked from a chair in the yard. And she did all of that. So I, the one person I hold in the highest esteem in the world, where the Lord comes first and my mother comes second.
You're a good son. That's what you were, what you are, a good man.
Well, I certainly give all the credit to the Lord. I sure do.
Do I need to ask who motivated you the most during your growing up years?
My mother. I can say that real fast. My mother. Top of the list. There are other motivators, but top of the list, my mother, Annie E. Giddings.
So what was the name of the school that you first taught?
Anna T. James. It's across the highway from where I live. It was then. Of course, it's another location now. Names have changed. Buildings changed. First job at the John Lasberg, then I went to Public Central. The integration came in Northam in 1969, and they closed down Lasberg School. I went to the Central. It was then a junior high school.
So you never substituted at Anna T. Jean's?
Never. It was called, it went from Anna T. Jean, different names, because there was a John Jordan and a Francis Hallett that went there, and it was changed to Rehoboth Elementary School. From Miss Frances Hallett, Frances Cockrell.
Yeah, I remember Mrs. Hallett as the principal when I was there. When I graduated from Anna T. Jean's, we went to Central, which was in 68, and then in 69, it was Freedom of Choice in 68, and I elect to go to Central. And then in 69, they integrated, and they turned Central to Northumberland Junior High School. I forgot that they had changed.
Well, they changed it to another name, too, because, see, Francis Cocker wasn't the last principal there. The last principal was John Jordan. Well, wasn't it called a Mantua or something? It might have been called Rehoboth. It may have stayed like that. But I know for a fact that she was there before John Jordan came along.
Mm-hmm.
Because John Jordan was teaching in the schools in Northumberland. And then he applied for the job for principal at Anna T. Jean, Rehoboth. And he got it. In 1959, my first job at Harlan Graded. See, after 10 years, we had no choice because they integrated all the schools. So they moved me from there down to, I call it Central, but it was called Northumberland now. Either junior high or something. It was named Northumberland something.
Central was the junior high school, and Northumberland High School remained Northumberland.
That's correct.
Yeah, Northumberland Senior High School. And when I entered the 10th grade, that's when I went to the senior high school.
Okay, yes, indeed.
Yes. They do have that habit or tradition of either tearing down the black schools, closing the black schools, changing the black schools' names, so on and so forth.
Trying to erase history.
Pretty much. But we're not going to let that happen.
Oh, no. No. No.
Tell me some of the fun things that you used to do when you were growing up.
Well, I'm telling you the truth. The fun thing we had, we did it among ourselves in the community, like maybe riding the bicycle or playing checkers or jump a rope or hide and go seek. They had stuff they called carnivals in the summertime. We'd go to the carnival and ride on the merry-go-round and things like that. Go to the beaches. At the time, they're coming up, there was a Mr. Hubbard Ball from Lancaster that had a school bus. And Mr. Anderson Taylor from Lancaster, these are black guys. Now, they had a school bus. We had turned into transportation buses. Ever so often, the church would get them to carry us on picnics to have down Wiggins Beach or Buckaroo Beach or something like that. And that was fun for us. Fun for us for doing things close to home. No television. Very few had telephones. And very few had light in the home. But still, actually, we had a good time. Good time to us was having, being around family and friends and having to eat and to play outside. That was our lifestyle. We loved that. We didn't long for other things because we didn't know about other things, and we enjoyed so much what we had. That was our life.
What were some of the foods that you used to love to eat?
Oh, my Lord. Do you have time all day? Fried chicken and gravy and homemade biscuits and homemade applesauce, homemade jelly, homemade jam, homemade meat from the hogs and chicken, read all those things, apple pie, pound cake, cherry pie, sweet potato pudding, stewed tomatoes, butter beans, and most of those things we raised on our property here. Now, my family wasn't fortunate enough to have a wheat to go to a mill to have the ground into flour because, of course, my mother, we couldn't afford no horses to raise a big garden. We had to raise our garden by hand. But, they were expert cooks. All the older people were expert cooks, and we just enjoyed the best in the food line back then. We call it the best kind of cooking on earth to the extent we always talk about it right now. Lord, this doesn't taste like what mama could fix. A daddy didn't do it like that. We held them in high esteem. We sure did. And then they were smart. They were endowed with knowledge and on the job training. They learned how to do things from this boss man. And so a lot of them were able to go into small business for their own because they could do only for the community. What they did, they learned through their boss man, from their employers. So you can have a lot of on-the-job training just by watching and then put into practice. Trial and error.
Did you eat any seafood?
Oh, my Lord. An abundance of fish, crab, oysters. I don't remember lobster in this area. But fish, crabs, oyster at the top of the list. See, most of them, the guys work at factories, either a fish factory or a tomato factory, or on what we call the Menhaden industry that were where they went to commercially catch fish and go and sell them to the factories and they're shipped off to the cities and other places. But they could bring that home. And a lot of them work at the oyster house, so they brought oysters home. A lot of the ladies work in the crab house, so they brought the crab meat home and crabs. So it was abundance of seafood, abundance of it everywhere. Everybody had it. Fried fish and stewed fish, baked fish, and abundance of seafood. Plenty of it.
Seem like that industry is gone now, the tomato plants or factories, I should say, and the fish houses, the oyster houses, the crab houses, they're gone.
I worked at a tomato factory at Brown's store. I worked at the fish factory, not on the boat now. We handle the scraps, but the product they made from fish after grinding, we used to bag it. So I had experience in working at the tomato factory and hauling the skins, fish factory, hauling the scrap from the fish. I worked at the oyster house. That was near the end of my graduate from Virginia State in the summertime. The oyster house was open, and I go down with my brother. We shuck some oysters to help them make money to go back to college in the fall, starting in August, and we worked until time to go back to college.
So when I asked you about what was your first job, you said teaching, but you did have other jobs before you started.
I thought you meant, like, if you said job, that's no compensation.
Oh, no. I mean job.
Oh, yes, my Lord. Oh, yes. But you want the job now. I also work with farmers. They would combine wheat, and the wheat would come through chutes on the tractor and go into the bags. And I would have to be the one who were able to change those bags before they got too high and run over. So I work on the farm. I did farm work. I did factory work, the better factory work, the fish factory, and the crab house. Now, at the crab house, guys and men were not allowed to pick the meat from the crabs. We had to crack, they call it then, crack the claws of the crab and get that meat of the claws that was sold separate. You could buy the claw meat. They had various names for various parts of the man crab. I don't know all of it. I know it had lumps, lump something. But for the claws, we weren't allowed to pick the crabs. We weren't allowed to crack the claws and get the meat of the claws. And it was sold. It was like it was the crab meat was sold, only cheaper.
You get claw, you get jumbo, and you get lump jumbo.
Yes, indeed. But the women did that, not the men. We got back to then, we got 15 to 20 cents a pound for claw meat. If you could get 4 pounds in a day, you're doing good. Because you know there's less meat, a whole lot less meat in the claw than it is in a crab. So it took us a long time to get a pound of claw meat.
Yeah, I was just thinking.
Yes, honey. Uh-huh.
Yeah, back fin.
Let me not perceive that. I also picked tomatoes. I picked tomatoes beginning at the age of 8. I used to go with my aunt, but we weren't allowed to use a basket. I was too small for that. So I used to pick it in a bucket and carry it and then pour it in the basket. We only got paid by the basket, but I couldn't carry the basket. I was too young and too small, too. So we have a bucket. I picked it in the bucket and carry the bucket and pour it in the basket. Hmm. And back to then, picture, everybody, if you didn't have a farm, you had a home. Everybody raised tomatoes, homes and the big farmers. I see the big farmers used to sell theirs commercially. They're carried to the fish factory, and then make it into tomatoes and ship cans, wherever you went to. But everybody raised tomatoes. Everybody. Every home raised tomatoes. There was a tomato factory and a fish factory in every community. And sometimes they had at least two in a community. They're all gone now. All communities had at least one oyster house, one crab house, and one tomato factory.
What happened, Mr. Guineas? The industry is zero.
You know why? Because of the change in the climate. But machines came in and replaced human resources. Well, it's a known fact that a machine could do a whole lot more work than an individual and a group of individuals. So it just phased out. And because they put in those combines and tractors and whatever you call it, and they didn't need common labor. Only to a small extent. And guess who ran the machines? Their owners or their offspring, not the blacks. So later in the year, they learned, but most times they didn't need them for that. And a lot of the black men, and I know a lot of my family, they moved away, especially to Baltimore, and went down to what they call the shipyard, a stevedore. A lot of them left at an early age and went there, and they came back home late year, they built homes, and they, of course, they were able to then be retired. And there was no pension to be paid, so they got a very small amount in Social Security if they got anything. But that's what happened. If it stays as the same now, I don't know of either. I think they have one oyster house, I think, down over there in Burgess, over there in Lothbrook somewhere, but there aren't any more of them. Machine shuts the oysters and do all the other work. That's what happened. Technology.
Would you say that technology sort of killed the industry and, in fact, killed sources of employment?
Well, I don't talk against technology for today's youth, and here's the reason why. That's all they know, and I believe that's all they're going to need to know in the future. So what they are doing is in their time here on Earth. I came along, I didn't have the access or the opportunity to be engaged that much in technology. Because when I taught in high school, we only had the ad machine, and that only came out at the end, almost the end of my career in teaching. And that's all we used. So what you do, you apply, and you what you have in your timeline, you, bec-
can't use for that. That's your life. That's part of your life.
They're all the same. Now, you know, the Negro College Fund say that a mind is a terrible thing to raise. Well, you do have to use your mind a lot in technology, but you don't have to use it in a basic sense. And so, therefore, the average student now in high school, they don't write with pencil and paper like we did. See, we use it to write with pencil and paper. You got to be skilled not only in writing, but in thinking and applying your thoughts to what you write. But that's no more. So I don't have anything against technology. I just say that you lack some things in basic knowledge because you don't have to apply your basic knowledge. You hit a key, and the machine almost knows what you want. And a lot of times, they'll complete it for you. Computer is my forte because I still like to know that I can work with my mind and hand. And that's the world that I came up in. And I use the computer some, but for the most part, in doing math or writing, I did my pencil paper into my mind and not the computer. We found that among the students now, they're very weak in speech and in language arts. Well, they don't have to apply that much anymore. The machine does it for them. So if the machine does it for you, and this is your world you're living in, why would you have the result to the pen and the pencil and the mind as basic anymore? And that's why I don't knock it. It's of the generation that these things have appeared in. So that's all they know, and that's their world. More power to them.
What would you like to see happen for the Northern Neck?
I would like to see industry come in the Northern Neck to the extent that we don't have to lose so many of our young people. And a lot of time now, the average adult has to leave home, unless they want to, to make a meaningful living. And I say meaningful, I mean salary that you can really provide for your family. Other guys are working two or three jobs to the extent they are just paying what you call the minimum salary and not paying hours to demand benefit. Industry, I think, will wake this place up tremendously. Meaningful industry. I mean industry that if you don't know it, you have the opportunity to learn how to use it. Now, I hate to say this because I don't like to talk negative against parents. But you know, Pixie, you can get around to that. Your early childhood, and I call it the beginning of life, has a great influence on the value that you take and carry along with you in adult life. I never went to the fact that I was loved at home. And I'm not saying that's prevalent now. But something is lacking with our children at an early age, that they have a tendency, some of them, we have some upstanding young folks right now, but the majority of them seem to not to like to do certain things because they don't understand that they have to do anything to really make a living. It's either given to them without any expectation for repay, and they are allowed to be disrespectful at an early age, not only to strangers, but to the parents at home. And they carry this out in the adult world, and they go. Many of them, because you don't know that much about the world and yourself at an early age. You learn those things as you go along as you grow older. And to think that you can go on a man's job and demand what you want without having to put up anything to accomplish what the job requires is a handicap. And it shows that you just don't have a desire to expect to be held accountable. There becomes a time and age that you become grown. And according to the word, when you become grown, you are supposed to be able to think rationally along the lines of employment and taking care of your family, not to expect the government, including you and me, to provide that. The Bible said, when I became a man, I pulled away childish things. So to me, if you are not working, making a productive living, you are a young man, you didn't stay in school, so you don't have the almost that education too. So you can demand something if you got an education, because so you know what is required to do what you're given. So you have a voice in it. There needs to be an awakening of our youth, and I don't know how it's going to be done. I know how it could be done, but that's according to them, that's outdated. That's old fashioned, and so I'm limited in what I used to do. But the younger folks when I came along, because a lot of them haven't gotten to the point that they thought they knew everything and didn't have to do it. Nobody can tell me what to do.
But the lines of youth now, they're hard, extremely hard to reach. And I didn't think for one time that I listened to the folks say that the children don't have no respect and they don't want to do this and they don't want to do that. And I wouldn't tell a parent that it extends from home because a lot of your friends don't like that. But Pixie, a lot of that goes back to your background, how you was raised, and what your parents expect of you. They expected the best. When you grow up and you are proud of yourself and your past and your value that you have, you're going to also try to do the best to make yourself shine or be accepted and appreciated. Unless someone gets a hand on you, that was me. I've been a teacher and I work with the youth. And I know that I couldn't teach now. I know because I wasn't taught to teach the caliber of children we have, youth we have now. So in my curriculum, so you prepare for life in your curriculum, and you are prepared for what you're going to face in the world. But I wasn't taught in my curriculum for teaching what goes on in the schools now. So I really can't relate because I couldn't be in that environment. I would be an oddball, and I couldn't function in there under the condition that they have now. I came up, and when I taught, and I love children, and I still love children, but I went there with the idea to do the best I could with what I had to make my children shine. My children made me look good, and they looked good. And so that was my motto. Make them look good. You want to look good? Make your children look good. But now you can't do that. You can't become close to a child. You can't pet a child and say, oh, that's so nice. You can feel maybe, but not reinforce with a pat or a rub. You cannot do that. I'm not saying that you shouldn't do it. I'm saying you can't do it. Not work in the public in certain places. It's forbidden. Look at our society and what we live in today with all the commotion in the world. But it all comes from the fact that morals are put aside. You're no longer. You say you love the word. You read it. But you can't teach it. Nobody will teach you to get it. Because that's old-fashioned. That's what they say now. I heard my niece and nephew say that. That's old-fashioned. Well, my world, I got my foundation, what they call old-fashioned, that had brought me to thus where I am today. But they didn't come up to that. They didn't have that opportunity because they are shut out because a lot of people give up on them at an early age. I mean, you can't make people do things. You try, but there's a time you have to just say, well, I've done my best, and so I get it over to the Lord and let him work it out. And that's the way it goes. We're losing a society of young people who are bright, look good, but just don't have that thought pattern of trying to make themselves top citizen, worthwhile contributing citizen to society. What they're thinking is what their peers impose on them through relationships, and that's the way it goes.
What advice would you give these kids?
You can't, because the home won't let you do it. Picture, I have some friends who tell me, their children are all gone, but they have grandchildren living with them. In fact, I have some younger parents who tell me the same thing, that they don't go into their children's bedrooms because they're not allowed. Their children tell them that that's their personal property. And so keep peace in your own home now that you bought and paid for, that you still paying for the upkeep and paying for the children that's in there. To keep peace, they don't go in there to see what the child has or the child's doing because they're not supposed to. It's off the limit. So they're trying to give advice now to any parent, especially those who have children, teenagers and upper level, low level adults. No, I don't say anything to them anymore. I used to help in tutoring at the churches and places. But if I can't communicate with you, if I can't communicate with you, there's nothing I can do to help you. That's all there's to it. And to the extent now, see, you can't pay me to go in or do any kind of tutoring because they give me the rules and regulations before I get there. You can't do this and you can't do that and you can't say this and you can't say that. Well, if that's part of me being the tutor and I can't do that, I don't need to be there. And I don't need that aggravation at my age. I wish well for the youth. I wish them well. I pray for them all the time. But no, if I can't do anything, I'm just making myself sick trying to do. And I know offhand that I can't do. Now, you're younger, and maybe you can give me some advice on that, but
It hurts my heart to see that we don't have any youth in the church. And most of the churches now don't even have any youth departments. Not a youth choir, not a youth group, not a youth nothing. And so when I learned that the Northern Association, that is a combination of churches, don't even have a youth department anymore. But that's a sad commentary. That's all I can tell you. Because that's a corporation of churches. If you don't have any youth in that, where are you going to have youth?
But if you could give advice, if you were given the platform, what would you say?
The picture you are answering, that thing as well as you do. You know that your parents raised you to be outstanding children. They fed you with information and knowledge and support to always be the best that you can. To the extent their examples made you want to be like them, they give you a mind that you're going to grow up and do great things. You have to have it in your life. It doesn't start overnight. It doesn't start when you get older. You learn those things like when you learn to walk. Stop, don't touch that. That's embedded in you from the youth, and you learn as you grow up. But that's in you. That's your characteristics. And you might not adhere to all of them, but you have a mind that, oh, Lord, Mom and Daddy were very different if I know I did that. Well, they can't say that now. Mama and Daddy didn't raise no devil at home. But not. And part of the MC the children. So they had to come in and eat at the table. They don't eat at no table behind no more. They played on little machines and things. They have to eat at all. There is no family time held in the home. Why? Well, I hate to say it, but I just say that I believe the parents are very, very afraid of the children. To the extent they're afraid of getting hurt from the children, so they leave it alone. And they think that's the way the world is when you get out in the world, but the world isn't like that at all times. You have to be a person who can produce, a person even take an advice from you. You have to see, you just can't give advice. You have to also have lived the advice that you're given. They have to see that. I couldn't tell my mama that the folks in the adult don't go to Sunday school, and you make me go to Sunday school. I may have said that one time, but I didn't say it no more. That's it. The control isn't there. Hate to say it, but control isn't there. And so a lot of that it goes on in school. The teachers, I force their time for that. The teacher won't have any authority at all in the school. It will always be the parents. Because they have to go along with the students. And if the school tried to do something that is made to be done at home, they're fighting to lose the battle because the parents are going to be against them too. So the thing that I would like to see as a wishful thinking, because I know what's going on in a lot of cases, and plus the fact I see a lot of things that I know I couldn't have even thought about living in my mother's house. Especially that's being done, and the parents tolerate it, and they try to make an excuse. That's the way it goes. At this age in life, and I give you advice too, if you find that you're in a situation, you have done all you can to try to correct the situation, you can't do it. 9 times out of 10, you're going to make yourself sick by worrying about it, and it still doesn't get done. You have to pray to the Lord, thank Him for what you could do, and give it all to Him, and let Him work at it. Now, I do believe that fully. I can't do it, even if I try. So if I worry about it, worry has never done anything but kill people. I make them sick. That's all. Actions speak louder than words.
Mr. Kenny, I always enjoyed being taught by you. I had math with you. I just remember you being a kind and caring and funny teacher. Made going to math fun because I was horrible in math. But I remember you either coming to the house or you wrote on my papers. I think you came to the house to tell Mom that I was good in math. And that was a big deal, you know, having some positive feedback to come back from your teachers to your parents. It was important. It was to me anyway.
Well, Pastor, what makes me feel good now? Not because I've done everything that's right. We all have faults. The hiccup is sort of blocked. The Bible says so. But I have students who meet me now who older have grandchildren. And they want to approach me by saying, Mr. Giddens, and I tell them, now you're all going, you can say Lacey, and they refuse that. That means you have done something that's positive in their life that they feel that they should, I don't want to use the word honor, respect you the same way they did as if
guy yesterday in the Walmart pipeline.
Oh, he looked like he was 100 years old. Do you know this kid? I said, no. I started talking to the minister and said, I remember you say, I didn't do nothing in math until I got you as a math teacher. But that made me feel good because I looked at myself, I played with them. But see, I was always of the teacher, of the fact that if the student didn't learn my picture, I mustn't teach. If a student that failed under me refused to do anything and didn't do nothing, because it made me feel terrible and I had to hold the student back after a whole year because the student didn't succeed. So I would see myself as a teacher. And I would hold that philosophy. If a student who has tried doesn't pass for the year, I still have tried, and the teacher isn't as good as the teacher proclaimed to be or could be. And therefore, if you have tried, say to me, a student for the year is a failure. If you had tried and done your best, why should I not give you at least a passing grade? That was my philosophy down through the years. And I had some who, back then, very few that just didn't do anything in class. Sometimes holding them back made them realize the next year, and they tried harder. But you can tell when a child had done his best and tried to get a lesson and ask you a question and doing the work. And that's the way it goes. I love teaching. I love when I was teaching. And I didn't have no trouble with no students. I just didn't. One thing, we went into class, and we did work. We studied. We did a lesson. We'd go outside and have a good time together, play ball, and everything. Look back inside, the atmosphere has changed. Teaching the students, that's all it was. But now the teacher in the school just can't do certain things. They're not allowed, even by law. They can't do it. They go in there and play it. They can't do it. I do believe in the future that they're not going to even have any school boards unless they are people that can direct all the rules and regulations that come to the school system. And see, that's coming almost probably now. If you can move books from the library, if you can do that, parents can do that and don't know a thing about the books. And other things they do, well, look up for the society under them. That's all. I was allowed to teach. I could teach. Indeed, I was allowed. And loved it. Teachers now, they can't teach. Too many rules and regulations. They can't do it. And you see the outcome. They can't even hire a bus driver, drop a bus. Let alone teach school.
Breakdown in society. I don't know if it's going to first off change that. Breakdown in society. That's all I know. And then we have a top leader contending for the president who's in that group on the verge of destroying our very democracy. Lord forbid. Lord forbid.
Mr. Gittins, I want to thank you so much for this interview. You have been a defining factor in my life as a teacher and as someone that I could look up to, especially being a black man, other than my father and other men in my life and my family. And it is important that we do have leaders that we can look to help us to make good decisions, because we are part of the society that will define, what we are. And we can still do that. And I'm hopeful for the young people that they might have to get a big hard slap upside the head. Not the physical one.
I'm saying, really, I'm saying.
Yeah, but I need to say it, that we're not talking about people going up and hitting people, but there's going to be some hard lessons that will need to be applied, because the future is very, very shaky. And if we don't pull together, we're going to fall, and we can't afford that either.
Yes, indeed.
But we have,
well,
we had people like you and Dr. Smith, Dr. Elton Smith, and Dr. Norris, and so many other people, the teachers of the past, the teachers of the present, and hopefully those will come in the future that will help us.
Hope so. Well, I enjoyed the interview. It was my pleasure. It really has been my pleasure.
Thank you very much.
And I hope that you can do something, because you're younger and you're other than younger people, to do something to entice our young people to want to do their best, to value that they are. They have to first think that they are valuable systems, citizens of the society. They have to be made to believe that. We have to talk them up and praise them up, but not to praise them when they're doing it wrong, And I think you could be a great influence for the younger people, what you're doing now.
Well, I'm hoping that they are listening to these interviews, because there is a lot of wisdom that has come through these interviews, not from me, but from those who are doing it, who have done it.
I said, we still have some good ones. We do. We do. Have some good spirits.
Yes, indeed. Prayer changes things, too.
Yes.
Night and night.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Always pray for our youth. In the church, every Sunday, in the Bible, often prayer. I like the fact that they don't forget to bring up their youth in the prayer, because as the Bible says, the prayer of a righteous man. Didn't say that I had to be perfect. I'll be able to muster those who come along. I'm a real believer in prayer. So I thank you so much for even thinking about me for the interview.
Thank you.
Yes, indeed. Well, anyway.
Yeah, Mr. Guinness, I'm going to let you go.
I know. Okay, then. You take care of yourself.
All
thank
right.
you again.
Thank you so, so, so very much. And I'll be seeing you soon.
You're welcome so very much, too.
Okay.
All right, then, baby.
All right.
God bless you.
God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Like Mr. Guinness, I too have hope for our future, which is within the hands of our young people, not only on the northern neck of Virginia, but the world. But preparation is key. Foundations must be maintained, and the village concept must be employed to help not only the youth, but all who reside within the village. A village that has no boundaries. I dedicate this interview to the young people of the Northern Neck as they make their way into an uncertain future. Know that there is support and love from many who want success for you. The music by Robert A. Hall. Thank you for listening.